This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Welcome to a Joycast from Joy 94.9. Visit joy.org.au to find out more about our Joycasts.
Congratulations, Ron, on receiving the Australian Geographic Society's highest honour, the Lifetime of Adventure Award for 2016.
I'm absolutely amazed, quite excited about the award. I've had a varied life of adventure, and it's led from one project to another to another. I think it's not just one single achievement. I think it's a number of achievements where I've continued to do some fairly special things and sort of led me, I suppose, to the finale back in 2012. When I assisted James Cameron in design and the build of his submersible, which was primarily there as a vehicle to explore and go further into our oceans. Yeah, it's been quite exciting lifetime, I suppose, and I've been very proud to be have achieved so much. But it's always been involved in working with teams of people. I haven't done any of this by myself.
Very humble.
I think anyone who's really an achiever is a team of people behind them. And, in most cases...
I cannot agree more, Ron. and just for our listeners, you started this elaborate path as an ABC radio engineer.
Yes. I started my career back in 1965. I actually remember that I was one of the technicians in ABC's Master Control when man landed on the moon.
How amazing.
I got involved in the cave diving and and really into scuba diving. Cave diving is really good because you can do that under any weather conditions and all the, the risk of flooding, which we experienced on one occasion. Generally, the waters are still, they're clean, and you can do it in adverse weather conditions. But, on one occasion, we were on the Nullarbor Plains and we had the big cyclonic storm. And, we were at the end of the expedition and this cave on the Nullarbor became the drain hole for all this water that's pouring out of the sky, and it just flooded the cave so quickly.
You were there with 12 other people, Ron, at the time.
There's 13 of us inside the cave. We had all this water rushing into the cave, and it was dislodging rocks, and it was cascading down. And you had a few people in the rock pile at the time, and some decided to exit the cave, those at the top of the rock pile, and they made it safely out. But we had a small interchange, and we were told about this storm, the clouds. It was sort of, at one stage it was, something's happening here, let's get the cameras, this is exciting, this is great.
Wow.
To run for your lives type of thing.
That sounds extremely scary. Is cave diving becoming more and more popular, or is it still one of those extreme sports? Well, it's certainly not for the faint-hearted.
Cave diving does vary from one group to another. There are some people who do the sinkholes and the easy access caves in Mount Gambier, and they'll call themselves cave divers. There's another group that I was involved with that you have to crawl through these grotty little passageways, and it's muddy, it's tight. You have to pass diving equipment from one person to the next.
Now, just so you've lost me, I don't know if I could do that. I do not have the stomach for that. I am an adventurer. I love skydiving and I love ocean diving and I love all those kind of things. But cave diving, and I love caves. We've got the Kenga Caves in South Africa, which is an amazing place to visit. But I don't know about diving into caves. I think that takes a special courage. Now, in these caves, you had some radio rigging set up, and that apparently is what helped you get out. You had rigged up a two-way radio system that could transmit through solid rock. Is that right?
I've got to admit that my time with the ABC, I knew a little bit about electronics and building cave radios. And I actually built a cave radio at my time at the ABC. And this was used on a number of expeditions, and in particular the one where we had that storm. And it's quite interesting when the police rescue were called. They came out, but you know, their communications wouldn't work. They had no way of contacting me. The cave is underground. And it was quite interesting because we actually conducted our own rescue from the people we had on the surface.
Wow.
The equipment we had for the... Yeah, for such an event, you know, we had all the ropes, we had the rigging for the tripods for the this safety line into the cave.
Yes,
and it was quite it sort of blew the police away, and they realised this group knows what they're doing.
Wow,
you know, they've got the equipment, they've got better rescue equipment than they had.
And what took you there initially, Ron? What was the expedition all about? Because it was sponsored by the Australian Geographic Society.
I think I've been on a number of expeditions that have been sponsored, by Australian Geographic. You know, they're a great organisation and great provider of small amounts of cash, I suppose, for these expeditions.
Mm.
But yes, they did sponsor the. It was actually the Paddington Plains expedition that we did in 1988, and they certainly, I suppose, made available a little bit of cash, and I suppose some people if you just got ordinary jobs. To do something special, you just need, if you can cover the expenses of what you need, a little bit of extra dive gear.
Yeah.
You put some of that money into, buying these underwater dive scooters, and we improved our the sleds that we were carrying the equipment on.
Yes.
So these little things just make such a big difference.
And was the idea to see what is in those caves?
Yeah, there was such potential at the time that you could kick into these grotty little holes and go caving, and if there's a lake, chances are it had never been looked at or had never been dived before.
Mm.
So I certainly went into a lot of these new places, and the big one that I was doing in the early 80s, Cocklebitty Cave. It was one of those that we go back year after year after year. And, finally, 82, we came to this huge rock pile, and we called it Toad Hawk. And we climbed this rock pile, and no one has ever walked on this rock pile before, and there's rocks the size of, Volkswagens, and you'd stand on it, and it would tilt, because no one's ever upset it before. It's how it landed. It's like bricks on a... been dumped out of a truck. You try and take one brick out, and half a dozen will move. Yeah.
Wow.
It's quite thrilling. Just to know you're sort of stepping over these big rocks, and then we climbed up this big hill and across the top of a rock pile, and then you look down and there's this beautiful lake, and you think, oh my God, it's going to go again. Yeah. Always cave diving was so exciting at the time because it's not like climbing a mountain where you come to the peak.
Exactly,
and
yes.
No more. It's sort of like, it must be such a letdown,
Well, you just don't know what is beyond that, isn't it?
Yeah,
you were certainly
ongoing.
Involved in a lot of adventures. I mean, the moon landing was, one of our history's most eventful happenings, I would say, and then the cave diving, and then going to the Mariana Trench was another unexplored piece of this wonderful planet we live on. And your involvement with that, Ron, was again with James Cameron, who you worked with initially in 01 when you were invited to work with rigging some cameras for a series of oceanic documentaries. Is that right?
Yes, that's right,
And then in 05 you went on the live broadcast from the wreck of the Titanic.
Yeah.
And then you did the Mariana Trench.
Yeah, I actually put the broadcast system on to a Russian submersible. They call them Mir 1 and Mir 2.
Right, right.
I think Mir is a term for a vehicle, I think. That, there's a Mir space station. But they're two diving submersibles. They're called Mir 1 and Mir 2. And these are 6,000 metre rated subs.
Wow.
It's actually, or it was being leased by an Australian company for 6 months of a year, and they used it for tourism, basically, a lot of tourism dives. They would also try to sell time to documentary crews.
Right.
James Cameron was part of that. That's how Jim got involved in the movie Titanic. He desperately wanted dive Titanic, and he thought, it's quite expensive as a tourist, just to go for
a dive. Absolutely.
So he had the idea to make a film. And that way, you know, Fox would pay for it.
Fantastic idea.
So, yeah, that's, I believe, how his role in the making of Titanic, you know, came about.
Okay.
There was a movie released after the Mariana's Trench dive, and it was also shot in full 3D. So it was, that alone, you know, was quite an achievement. So, yeah, while we were building the sub, on the expedition, you know, we had a film crew with us, you know, nearly all the time.
Right. And you were involved in the design or the engineering of that Challenger Deep? Is that what the vessel was called?
Yeah, the vessel was called Deep Sea Challenger.
Sorry, Deep Sea Challenger. Challenger Deep is a spot, isn't it, in the Mariana Trench?
Yes, it is. And the name Challenger Deep came after the ship called the Challenger that, you know, was going around the various oceans, you know, plumbing for the world's deepest ocean.
Right.
And, yeah, it was eventually located off Guam in the Pacific.
Yes.
So, there's quite a bit of history there. You know, I think the most important thing, of all the things I've done, is that, you know, we've been involved with scientists. And, you know, even in the caves of Nullarbor, we're out there collecting water samples, geology samples. For research. When we were doing the James Cameron expedition, you know, we had biologists, we had geologists, you know, volcanologists, it had everybody. So, you know, you sort of realize you're surrounded by, you know, scientists, and, you know, you realize what you're doing
is meaningful and
exploration for a particular reason. Yeah,
to learn more. Gaining knowledge, yes.
Yeah, it's not really just about planting a flag, it's about, you know, going there, bringing back the science. That's just, so exciting. And, it also opens a lot of doors because, you know, if you've got scientists backing, you can often get, you know, special permissions.
Exactly, yes. Yeah, well, Guam is it's a U.S. island territory. And just for our listeners, Guam is almost, shall I say, about halfway between Japan and PNG, sort of to the west of the Philippines and Indonesia. Is that
right? There's a little group of islands. I think they're the North Carolina group. And we would come down to a little island there, probably about, I don't know, 12 hours steaming from a Mariana's Trench. And we would actually get into this little island group, and, you know, the boat will be in calm waters, and we could work on the sub, you know, to get it ready for the next dive.
Wow, sounds amazing.
And, you know, we met some of the people there. They really embraced us.
Yes.
And they even, you know, had special ceremony. And myself and Jim were sitting in this little island group with, you know, these wonderful people. And, you know, they called us navigators. And,
you know, they
made this special, you know, award and this ceremony. And, it was just so humbling to be part of that.
How do you get there? That would be my question.
We put the Deep Sea Challenger on a boat in Sydney Harbour.
Okay.
It was quite bizarre because we were in direct view of, from the Anzac Bridge.
Okay.
So anyone on the Anzac Bridge could have seen us, putting the sub on the ship, but no one knew.
Wow.
It was quite a, not secret, but it just wasn't advertised.
Mm.
It was sort of in open view, but secret.
and did you, did you continue by boat then?
I actually sort of flew to New Guinea. I actually stayed back in Sydney for, those days when the ship was going up to New Guinea.
Okay.
And that was to get some of the acoustic, the communications equipment.
Right.
That uses literally sound vibrations through the water for communications to the sub.
Wow.
Having a little bit of issues there, so I stayed back to resolve those issues. And then we met the boat in New Guinea, and, I sailed up from New Guinea on the ship. But most people nowadays, I think they would fly to Guam, probably from, you know, Singapore or Malaysia or somewhere.
Or maybe even Manila, I guess. Manila.
There's
flights to Manila from Melbourne now, which is good. How do you actually measure that depth? Is that through sonar?
Actually, it's still probably do a bit of controversy about what is the actual depth. Early soundings were done by like a steel wire. The Mariana's Trench is that deep, but a piece of steel is not strong enough to support its own weight.
My goodness.
Okay.
Is that about, from reading a lovely friend, Dr. Google, it's about 11,000 meters, so
it's getting close to 11,000. They claim they've got spots deeper than 11,000, but we dived to 10,900. We believe there's a few spots that are just slightly deeper. Our target was quite a large area, flat area, so that we could land the submersible safely, and then we could explore that area. And we thought by exploring that area, we would maybe find an even deeper spot somewhere.
Right. And did you?
No, we found out that the area we land in, it's between two of the Earth's tectonic plates.
Right.
And over many, many years, it's filled with a sediment. So where the two plates intersect, like at a V angle, there's this big flat plain in between the two plates that is just silt, and it's relatively flat, and it's very, very fine, and you touch it and it just stirs up the silt, and it just will black out. You'll end up in no visibility, but in a submersible, you can then motor out of that silt and you're in clear water. And providing you keep going forward, you'll get this incredible ultra-clean water, almost invisible except for the massive weight of water that's on top of you.
Sounds amazing. Yeah. What is down there?
Look, we were able to bring up a few samples of sediments from the bottom, and there is this microbial-sized life down there. And I think that's what it was all about, to prove that life exists on the bottom of the oceans. Yeah, and for a long time, a lot of scientists believe there's no point in going deeper than 6,000 meters because there is no life. Well, I think we proved that wrong.
You certainly did. Now, do you think that under the sea is a new frontier for travel?
We can do it. Dive on places, like Titanic and the Bismarck, 5,000 metres, very deep water, and some of the hydrothermal vents. I think it's a great opportunity. Many people would love to sort of visit those places. Ships at sea, submersibles, they're fairly...
Well, I guess it's especially the Titanic, because it's such a famous ship and had songs and movies and all things made about it. I was always fascinated by the Titanic, and just for our listeners, I'll mention that the Titanic sank in 1912, about 600 kilometers southeast off the coast of Newfoundland, which is in Canada, and was only discovered in 1985.
Yes.
That is certainly one of those deep sea adventures I would definitely put my hand up for.
Don't know if these Russian Mir subs are still being chartered for tourism.
And your next adventure, or are you starting to slow down, or are you still at it?
When I received this lifetime adventure award, it was sort of like, I've done all the adventure of my lifetime, or is there still something expected of me in my current lifetime? So that one's hard to answer. I persevered in the deep sea industry. I've now created a company where we are still doing design and research of undersea components. And we actually want to make more subsea parts available for adventurers and industry.
Amazing.
So that's what I've been able to do. And, we're hoping that we may still do one or two projects into some very deep water.
Right. And do you normal travel? I'll put that in inverted commas. Do you just go on a normal family holiday to Noosa or Brisbane?
My last holiday was to Heron Island.
Okay.
I thoroughly enjoyed it. I only went there for 3 or 4 days, and it was absolutely fantastic. And, I've got my two little girls, and both snorkeling, and, one of them said to me, I think I'd like to go scuba diving. I think that's my legacy, I guess.
We've got a segment on our show, Ron, which is where we ask for travel tips. Have you got any special travel tips you'd like to share with our listeners? From reading your adventures, you sound like a bit of a MacGyver, so I can picture pieces of wire and all sorts of interesting instruments always in your bag. Is that true or not really?
Oh, when I was doing the film documentaries on the quest. You know, we were on a ship and we went all over, the Caribbean and up into Alaska and around Australia. I actually sailed on the ship from Sydney through to Hawaii, then
amazing.
On to San Francisco, I think it came in. So, that was, just absolutely amazing. But I suppose one of my most favourite places would have to be Alaska.
Mm.
I was fortunate that we actually just happened to have a helicopter on the ship. And,
lucky man.
Some of our stories were involved in ice, so we were flying up to the glacier. We were doing things like ice caving, caving into holes in the glacier.
My goodness.
The water that's cascading down into these passageways, and you're wading through this water, and the ice is just so compressed that there's just no void in it. You just look into it, and it's perfect.
Oh.
No crazing, no cracks, no bubbles, no nothing. It's just almost visibly clear. And occasionally when the owner of a ship would come on board, he would actually send a helicopter to the top of the glacier to get some glacial ice for his cocktails.
What a great story. Nothing like a G&T with some glacial ice in it.
Glacial because it's perfect ice. Yeah.
Wow, amazing. Ron, is something else you'd like to share with our listeners?
I've had some amazing dives, and if you are a scuba diver, I think probably it's only 1 in 100 dives, or let's say 1 in 100 dives is something really special happens. It could be just a pot of dolphins or a sailfish or something will swim by, and that's just absolutely amazing. So you don't expect it every dive. It's just 1 in 100, I'd say, would be extra special.
What is your favourite diving spot?
I used to teach diving in South Australia. On weekends I'd go out in my boat, and I actually invested, this is not many years ago, everyone else was using paper depth sounders. You have to replace the paper so they wouldn't turn them on.
Right.
And I bought one of the first depth sounders it wasn't an LCD, it was a cathode ray tube. And I kept it on all the time, and I was finding new dive spots. And it was just so exciting because we drive over these spots on the way to a regular dive site.
Mm.
And no one knew that these little tiny reefs existed. And, some of those have been some of my special dives,
Nice.
So I used to make a policy of when I would go away, this is recreationally for myself, diving. You might dive in a favourite known spot, but at least every trip I do a dive onto a new spot.
That's an excellent philosophy.
It's just amazing because some of those new spots became favourite spots.
Mm. Amazing.
So I don't know. I think there's so much out there, so much to explore. And as I said, we drive over places you've been over 100 times to get to what you think's a favourite spot, and you just don't know what you're driving over.
Exactly. And I guess that fits in very well with the theme of our show, which is the escape pod. And part of the theme is that you can travel within the perimeters of your own little neighbourhood. There's so much to see. There's so much to discover. And I'm still discovering Melbourne. I've been here for 10 years now, and I still love being here, and I still discover things on a weekly basis.
Yeah, I'm sort of always the motto, if the door opens, go through it.
Absolutely. I love that motto. That might become the new motto of our show. Ron, it's been a pleasure talking to you today. Thank you very much for your time. And we wish you all the best with your further adventures.
Okay, no worries. Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
You can find more Joycast and show blogs. Go to joy.org.au.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.